Hello, everyone. It is Anthony Bandiero, attorney and senior legal instructor for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing you the new webinar, the Wednesday night webinar, Reasonable Suspicion Deep Dive. I really think you're going to love this topic. I am broadcasting from Dallas, Texas. I am teaching a class tomorrow here for Texas troopers. The last count for the class was 120 troopers and local law enforcement are going to be with me for the next 2 days, which is incredible. Look, I would love to teach you guys in person too. I know the online stuff is really helpful and so forth, but you know, for my East Coast guys, it's 9 o'clock. How about you bring me to your agency and we can do this at 9 o'clock in the morning? All right. So quickly about my background for those who care. Most of you probably don't. You just like, I don't care what this guy came from or what he did. I just want to know, does he know what he's talking about? For those who do care about my background, I was a trooper sergeant with the Nevada Highway Patrol, now the Nevada State Police. They like to hand out titles there, not pay. And I have, you know, had a really good experience. I love Vegas. I love the job I did there, but I ended up retiring early. Lieutenant Juno cares. I ended up retiring early to go to law school. I went to Gonzaga School of Law, and I now live outside of Spokane, Washington in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. If you have not been to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, it is off the hook. And if you're there in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, you got to look me up. I'll buy you a beer. It is really one of the most beautiful places in America. Absolutely love it. Okay. The books. Guys, if you want to support not only Blue to Gold, but if you want to support yourself in your education, you got to get the books. Okay. These books are for you. The Search and Seizure book is by far, without a doubt, the best-selling search and seizure book in America. Maybe that's not hard to do. I don't know. There's other search and seizure books out there, but the point is we, you know, tens of thousands of police officers have our books, and they really love them. And Logan backs me up on my play. Drugs on Wheels. This is the seminal. This is the go-to book for criminal highway interdiction. Okay. It's a very meaty book. It has a lot of content in there. John Wien has completely overhauled that book. John Wien, our attorney, senior legal instructor, he just completely put a lot of love in there. And hey, Teresa's back. Okay, cool. So our social media director is back, and it's I know she had some family stuff, so I'm glad that you're here. It's 9 o'clock where she is. And there's a report writing books. Guys, we're going to talk a little bit about report writing, but again, I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I'm just trying to tell you what I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about search and seizure, and I'm passionate about making good reports. You can do the best job in the world. You can blow it out of the water with your conduct and your performance. You can be stellar out there in the field, but if you cannot write reports, you're going to have a bad day in court. Can I get an amen? Okay. I'll repeat, if you're doing a stellar job in the field, but you cannot write reports, you're going to have a bad day in court. Okay. You know it. So don't waste all the good work that you do out there by writing crappy reports that end up getting your cases tossed and sometimes yourself sued. Okay. Did you guys know that we are going to give a gun away at the end of this webinar? Did you say no or yes? Why or in? Did you guys know that we're going to give away a gun today? So this is something that we're starting to do because we just want to, you know, show our love. And now here's the deal, okay? There are some stipulations on this. So this is for law enforcement. This giveaway is for law enforcement officers and prosecutors, okay, or for retired law enforcement prosecutors and the military. This is just, I know I have some people that watch me, and they're not in the criminal justice system. I have defense attorneys that join me on here, and they're always nothing but respectful, supportive of what I'm trying to do. They're not here for malice. They're here for support, and they want to learn and so forth. But The point is that this gun will go to a law enforcement, military, or prosecutor, active or retired, and will draw the name at the end of the class. You do not, don't tell Newsom, and of course, you cannot be a prohibited person. Sorry, Rick. Okay, some quick disclaimers. Laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive, right? This just means that the things I teach here, your state may be a little more restrictive in your standard operating procedures. Probably not. This is pretty, general stuff here when it comes to the Fourth Amendment. Yeah, Rick has a switch. At least everybody else has a switch. Hey, he'll give you the switch for your gun. If you have any doubts about you're doing out there, push up the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. So if you have anything that you want to ask, get some legal advice, of course, go to your local attorney. All right. So let's start off with a really good mentality here. And it's the right to be left alone. When it comes to these reasonable suspicion stops, right? The right to be left alone. That isn't that a hallmark of a free society? Can we all agree? I know we all have a lust for the bust. We do want to catch bad guys. We want to put them in the clink. But at the same time, don't forget that you have to live in the world that you police, right? One day you're going to be on the receiving end of that traffic stop. I got to tell you, I was on a receiving end of a traffic stop not too long ago in the state of Washington. And the trooper was just phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal, especially because he did not give me a ticket. That made him even more phenomenal in my book. But the point is, he was professional, he was courteous, he was safe, he did everything by the book. And so just when you're out there treating people and talking to people, you want to be professional and so forth, but you also have to appreciate that people can be left alone. They can tell you, hey, cop. Do you have reasonable suspicion? Am I being detained? No? Did I want to leave, right? Okay. All right. As Terry Russell Howe says, no right is held more sacred or is more carefully guarded by the common law than the right of every individual to the possession and control of his own person, free from all restraint or interference of others, unless by clear and unquestionable authority of law. I like that. And I think we all can agree on that. So when you have the laws in your favor, obviously the law is, when the law is in your favor, then you can detain, you can interfere with a person's liberty. But if you don't have the authority of law, they have to be, you have to leave them alone unless they want to consensually have an encounter. Okay. So reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion is not a high standard. It's a low standard. It's a moderate chance of an illegal activity. That's not high, but it does have to be somewhat specific as to the person, right? That's going to be probably one of the main issues we're going to talk about here, is that sometimes reasonable suspicion is a tad too generic. All Terry stops must be justified at its inception and reasonably related in scope to the circumstances which justified the interference in the first place. It also cannot continue for an excessive period of time or resemble a traditional arrest. That is very, very important, right? Terry stops, you have to be legit initially, right? You can't, if you make a bad stop, you have a fruit of the poisonous tree type of situation. But also, you cannot, extend a Terry stop and investigative detention too long. Otherwise, you turn it into a de facto arrest. I can tell you what the word is, okay? If you're taking notes, this is what the word is: diligent. That is the word, okay? That is the word. It's not a word. It's not a synonym. It's the word. The court is going to ask when it comes to over detentions, were you diligent? You do not have to be the fastest cop on the block, but you cannot intentionally be the slowest, okay? There'll always be the slowest cop, right? The lowest common denominator, but you can't intentionally drag your feet, especially when you're trying to do other unrelated things, like get a dog out on the car stop and do a sniff without reasonable suspicion. So just kind of keep that in mind, okay? Just be diligent and so forth. So two requirements, take a picture of this if you want, or just kind of memorize it. In order to have a valid Terry stop, the two main things we're going to look at is, was it valid at its inception? Good, we had reasonable suspicion. The next step is the scope, or was the duration lawful, right? Did you do those things to confirm or dispel your suspicions. This is the partial segment of the police report in Terry versus Ohio. And it is our seminal case. So on October 31st, 1963, in downtown Cleveland, we have a detective, Martin McFadden, who's working plainclothes in the shopping district. And he sees three men. That's John Terry on the left. That's Carl Katz in the middle. And that's Richard Chilton on the right. And our man of the hour is, you know, Detective Martin McFadden on the top right. So McFadden sees these three men and they're acting kind of odd. They're going in front of multiple businesses, particularly a United Airlines ticket office and a jewelry store, on Huron. And they're looking in the stores and they're talking to each other and they're looking and they're talking to each other. And here's the deal. They look like they're casing the joint, right? And in other words, it doesn't look like aggressive shopping or window shopping. It looks like casing. And so McFadden goes up to these men and he says, "Hey, what are you guys up to? Like, you guys are acting suspicious. Like, I've just watched you. And in 12 different times, you're kind of going back and forth, back and forth." And Terry, quote, mumbles something. He can't come up with a coherent answer to save his life about what he's doing. He could have said something like, "Oh, hey, sir, I'm sorry. You must have misunderstood. I'm not looking to hurt anybody. Our girlfriends work in the jewelry store in the United Airlines ticket office. You can go talk to her. Her name is Julie." And then the cop goes over there and says, "Hey, are you Julie? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, that's my boyfriend. We're just waiting to go. He's reminding me to, you know, to not dilly-dally because we're going to the movies," right? They got air conditioning and all. So, but that's not what happened. He mumbles something. So then he pats these three men down and he finds two illegal firearms on their persons. A little fun fact, since we're doing a little deep dive, did you know that originally the case was Chilton versus Ohio, because he was C comes before T, right? It was Chilton, Terry versus Ohio. And then Chilton got killed during a botched armed robbery and he's out. So who's next up on the list of names for the Supreme Court? Terry. So it actually, we could have had something called the Chilton stop. And thank God, you know, he kind of, because the thing is, it doesn't have the same, it doesn't roll off the tongue as much as a Terry stop, you know, just less syllables, but I digress. So Terry argues that this was not reason, you know, this was not lawful because the Terry had priors. I'm not aware that Terry, I'm not sure if Terry had priors. I can't answer that. I know Chilton did not have priors. I can tell you that. I know that Chilton did not have priors. But people are liking the commentary here, but the point is that Terry says, "Hey, look, there is, you know, there's only two encounters recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1963. There is consensual encounter and there's an arrest. Well, this is not a consensual encounter because they didn't feel free to leave. And this is also not an arrest because McFadden did not have probable cause, right? Now, the U.S. Supreme Court, of course, gave us the Terry stop based on McFadden's really good observations. And they actually have a plaque in downtown Cleveland where this stop occurred. And all I'm going to ask you is a favor. The next time you're in downtown Cleveland, go pay respect to the plaque. And then go check your pockets for your phone and your wallet and see if they're still there. Because there is no damn good reason why you should be in downtown Cleveland at all unless you're on drugs. Are you on drugs? Okay. Stay away from downtown Cleveland. We have some Cleveland cops here and they can back me up. Okay. Okay. Is society better off because McFadden stopped Terry before the armed robbery, right? I want you to think about it, right? This is good police work. Let me just tell you something. I don't know all of you. I don't even know most of you. I definitely know some of you. Okay. But I know, okay, I know that because of your good work, you have saved lives. And if you haven't saved a life, you have definitely reduced or eliminated injuries to people. And you have also reduced or eliminated property crimes and so forth because of the Terry stop. Are you with me on this? You can't really prove a negative, okay? You just can't be like, I know for sure. Maybe you do, but for most part, I know for sure that if I didn't stop that drunk driver, he would have killed somebody. Maybe sometimes you do, but a lot of times you don't. But I know that you have. And that is what Terry stops are all about, okay? They're all about trying to mitigate or eliminate future harm. Not all about, but really that's what it's about, right? McFadden prevented an armed robbery. And we don't want an armed robbery if we can avoid it, okay? We're not looking for, hey, that's a good stat, you know what I mean? Oh man, I'm going for a robbery detective position later this year. I sure like to get that stat. Maybe I'll just watch it next time and try to get a good caller. No, we want to stop it. And it's kind of like Minority Report, okay? Now, here's the problem, okay? In America, we don't have any precogs in salt baths pooping out pieces of wood with bad guys' names on them, where we just go catch them and put them in a jail, right? In America, we got to do it the old-fashioned way. We have to articulate what we're doing out there in order to prevent crime, okay? So, I'm just for those who are watching on demand, you're going to be watching us like a link. We do have several hundred people here. It's one of the larger webinars we've had in a while. And somebody's asking if we make a Terry stop, should we put in there, that we made the stop to mitigate or prevent future harm? No, probably not. That's too close to Minority Report to do that. But the point is that's one of the public policy reasons that the Supreme Court has allowed us to do Terry stops is to prevent crime from happening. Because if you think about it, by the very definition of a Terry stop, no crime has occurred, right? It's not illegal to look into a window 12 times, but it turned into something. Now, we're gonna do a quick commercial break. Here's how I used to like talk about all the things that we do, in the beginning or in the end. I'm just going to ask you guys while I'm talking to you, will you indulge me for a second and allow me to just kind of share what Blue to Gold does and so forth? The first thing I'm going to ask you is, guys, we are building our later 2025, our last quarter, our Q4 quarter for hosting in 2025. We're also looking for 2026 hosts. If you want to bring Blue to Gold to your agency, it doesn't cost you a penny, okay? Unless you want to have us train your whole agency, which is really what I do now, but that's what I focus on. But we still have a lot of hosts that just want to host us. It doesn't cost you a penny. We do a lot of the work. You just kind of help us. Contact us at training@bluetogold.com. Call our 800 number and say, "Hey, I'm interested in hosting. What does that look like for us?" In a few weeks here, I'm going to Alaska, to train up there. So we just Guam. We got to get Guam on the books, okay? And so the point is that if you're interested in having us out, please have us out. All right? Okay. When do we get that Blue to Gold conference? Actually, I will tell you, all kidding aside, there is a conference in the works, but the problem is they're very expensive and you can't just do it willy-nilly. You have to do it right to make sure that it works out for everybody. But there is a Blue to Gold conference in our future, and we're hoping next year, but we don't want to make any promises that we can't keep. But I love what you're saying. Anchorage is not sharing us this time. I can't. I had a great time in Alaska last year, but I'm going to Anchorage and then actually going to Fairbanks right after Anchorage. So I guess you have to go see me up in Fairbanks if you're in Alaska. But it's gonna be like a little tour of Alaska. It's gonna actually be really, really fun. Stanley, absolutely not. We're not going to New Orleans, okay? I mean, what? I gotta hand out bulletproof vests to the attendees? No, we'll go to probably maybe Nashville. I don't know. Maybe Nashville. Look, let's look at Sokolo, right? So we're trying to work on the AI. Don't give me a hard time. It's better than it's better than most people are doing out there. But yeah, you can find little imperfections like the six fingers and so forth. But here is here's what happened, okay? So Sokolow, old Andrew Sokolow, this is the deal. He bought a ticket from Honolulu to Miami in cash. He paid the ticket cost $2,100. Now, first of all, this is like 80s. This is like 80s money. So he probably flew first class, but he bought a ticket with cash, $20 bills. I guess that's suspicious in its own sense. Under a name that he did not match his name under his telephone number. This is what the DA started looking him up, and he had the telephone number he provided was not the same name. This was easy in the 1980s. It was easier to lie about your identity to fly a plane. He stayed in Miami for only 48 hours, despite that it almost took him for not 40 hours, but almost took him a day to fly back and forth. So he's not staying that long. He had no luggage on his person. They stopped him in Miami, and we kind of go from there. Okay, now. The Ninth Circuit, okay, so they prosecuted this case, in Hawaii. The Ninth Circuit said that this was a bad stop, and here's why. They used a two-part test, and they started talking about, well, is it illegal to buy a ticket in cash? No. Could it be an innocent explanation for the guy going to Miami for just 2 days? Yes. In other words, what they did is that they basically did a divide and conquer, right? They just took out all these facts and they just dispelled them, and they didn't allow the police officers to use him under the totality of the circumstances. But that ain't the right answer, right? That is not the right answer. So the Supreme Court got rid of this arbitrary two-part test. No, it's T to the O to the C. When you really look at these five factors, do you think that there's a moderate chance the guy is up to criminal activity? When you look at the whole thing, the fake name, the cash, the staying, he flies for 24 hours, only stay for 48, and never checks any luggage. He's going to Miami. He's going to South Florida. Don't even bring a Hawaiian shirt. Okay, the guy's from Hawaii. Don't even bring a backup shirt. Give me a break. You don't even bring any cocaine to Miami. Give me a break. You don't have any luggage to bring cocaine back to Honolulu. Give me a break. We know what's going on here. The guy was up to criminal activity. The Supreme Court said the concept of reasonable suspicion, like probable cause, is not readily or even usefully reduced to a neat set of legal rules. In evaluating the validity of a stop such as this, we must consider the totality of the circumstances, the whole picture, right? The whole picture. Courts use the totality of circumstances test. They do not use what's called divide and conquer. Well, they're not supposed to use divide and conquer. I can't control any judge, but I certainly cannot control, predict what a district court judge will do, because oftentimes they are former defense attorneys and they have not given up that mentality when they're on the bench. But the point is, they're supposed to look at the big enchilada, the whole thing, the T to the O to the C, right? As the court said, in reviewing an investigatory stop for reasonable suspicion, we must consider the circumstances of each case to see whether the detaining officer has a particularized and objective basis for suspecting legal wrongdoing. That's going to be one of the issues here, okay? Is that sometimes your reasonable suspicion is not particular enough. Okay, we're going to talk about that. I call that dragnets. But Illinois versus Wardlow, let's talk about what happened in Wardlow. All right, here's what happened. So, three Chicago police officers in their marked units start entering the west side of Chicago, okay? And they see Wardlow and a few of his friends on a street corner, and high crime area, they're on the street corner and they see the cops and they start running. And they catch Wardlow. They end up doing a pat down of him and that bag that he was holding, and they find a firearm in him. Now, Sasha, if you had something, let me know. But in the chat. So Now Wardlow is basically making the argument of what? Hey, that's not reasonable suspicion. Okay, S just running is not reasonable suspicion. I like to say that Wardlow is almost making the argument that he was just exercising. I mean, that's kind of like the mentality. He's like, well, look, Your Honors, I mean, I can. This is a free country. I can jog, but really, was that suspicious the way that he was doing it, right? And the answer is yes, right? Thus, the determination of reasonable suspicion must be based on common sense judgments and inferences about human behavior. So not only do we use the T to the O to the C, but we also look at those particular facts and circumstances through common sense lenses. We're not, we don't have to be a psychiatrist, psychologist, social worker to understand, like, man, something is wrong here, right? And you're allowed to use your common sense inference, but you're also allowed to use your training and experience. Now, what I teach in my report writing class is an acronym called NERDS, okay? Maybe it's a reflection of my personality, okay? But this is the best that I can do for you to try to get you to really think about these factors. The top, in my view, the top five factors, not there's many more, but the top five factors that I want you to look at are these ones. Rick, maybe you can put a link to the RSPC Pocket Guide, and this will go into this issue more deeply. But the first one is nervousness, right? And so, and the first is we're gonna go into this, we're gonna go into nervousness. The next one is evasive conduct. The next one is reactions, deception, and specifics. Let's go through one at a time. So let me see what this says here. Some officers and departments say you should terry pat down everyone for officer safety. No, you should not. That's called a civil rights violation. Case law says you need specific articulable facts and can't terry pat down everyone you encounter. How detailed do you have to articulate your justification for a terry pat down? So the answer is actually pretty simple. The Terry stop is based on criminal activity. The pat down is based on armed and dangerous. It is two different articulations. Now, obviously, if you're stopping somebody because you believe that they're potentially involved in a burglary, a robbery, a carjacking, then pat them down because their crime fundamentally is one of violence, right? But if you're detaining somebody because you have reasonable suspicion that they may be tagging a wall, I mean, they might be a gang member, but that's a probably bad example because a lot of taggers are gang members, and usually gang members are considered armed and dangerous. But let's say a person is shoplifting, right? That the way they're acting in the store, they're ducking, they're doing peekaboo in the aisles and so forth, and you detain them for suspicion of shoplifting. You're not, with those facts, you're not going to pat that person down. So there's your answer. Criminal activity is a Terry stop. Armed and dangerous is a Terry pat down. Now, I have a webinar on that too. It's called Terry Stops and Pat Downs, where I talk about those issues. I go into cases and so forth, but hopefully that helps. But I will tell you that I call these Instapats. I do have officers in some big cities that will stop somebody, and man, they will pat you down so quick. I mean, I call it massaging you. They'll give you a massage so quick, a police massage, it'll make your head spin. I saw one video, just recently, where this guy gets stopped for littering, like flicking a cigarette or something like that, something stupid, it's just something very minor. And the cop says, "All right, get in front of my buddy bumper," and boom, the first thing the cop is doing is putting hands on this guy. And I'm like, "Where is the armed and dangerous?" I mean. We need a legit reason to put hands on somebody. It's not a high standard, but it is a standard. When it comes to nervousness, let me give you a little pro tip, okay? Do not put in your report something as simple as the driver was nervous, the passenger was nervous. I looked at the subject and he appeared nervous, right? That is not going to help you. You know why? Because remember I told you I got stopped for speeding the other day in Washington? Do you think I was a little nervous on that traffic stop? Right? I got my gun on me, right? I don't like to be on the receiving end of the red and blue lights. I like to be on the giving end. The point is, I was a little nervous. But the one thing I definitely was not was abnormally nervous, because I'm not that worried. I'm not, you know, I know I'm not committing a serious crime and so forth, and it's and so forth. So the point is, when you say, when you add nervousness to your report, I need you to talk about why it was abnormal nervous, because the sweating, the fumbling, the stuttering, the shaking, and so forth. Okay. And also, my friend over here, Michael Pascal, he actually said the most important, one of the most important things that we can talk about tonight, and it's the most powerful word in a police report. It's the word because. State your opinion. Being nervous is an opinion. You know, maybe that's their baseline. Maybe they're like Mr. Bean or something like that, just have a nervous disposition. But state your opinion. The driver appeared, you know, very nervous because, and explain it. Okay. The next one is evasiveness. This one kind of is in line with Illinois versus Wardlow. Now, I want to differentiate between avoidance and evasiveness. You got to be very careful about describing a person who seems to want nothing more than to be left alone, okay? And to want to avoid you. People have the right, I repeat, they have the right to see you and get up and start walking away. How many times have cops stopped a person for nothing more than trying to leave the area upon their presence? I'm not saying that is not suspicious. I'm not saying that's a little odd. But I am saying in America, that is not enough to stop them. If that was, then millions of people are getting stopped every single year for nothing more than wanting to be not in your presence. It's a state of affairs in 2025 and beyond. There are a lot of people who simply do not want to be in your presence because they think that, you know, maybe bad things are going to happen and so forth. And they might be involved in criminal activity. But I just had one the other day. This guy was sitting at a slot machine, not playing the slot machine, and he sees the cop come into the casino. He gets up and starts walking away. And the cops in the report say, due to him not playing, seeing us and getting up, he may have been involved in some kind of gambling crime. Give me a break, okay? It was blatantly unconstitutional. The stop with those facts was blatantly unconstitutional. It can get these cops really jammed up. The case got tossed because they found drugs on the guy. But the point is, we can use that a little bit, but you need evasiveness is kind of what we're talking about here. The next one is reactions, right? So reactions, what reactions, whether verbal, physical, and so forth, do they do that are kind of, that are not consistent with how innocent people act? Now, if people see a police officer and get up and start walking away, is that an odd reaction, right? Say yes. Absolutely. We're on the same page here. I'm not saying it's worth nothing. I'm just saying that you need something a little bit more. So, you know, people chain smoking during traffic stops and short stays at a known drug house and abandoned property without asking. So, you know, just look, you have to look at the RSPC pocket guide, okay, where there's hundreds of these factors that you can look for to see if they're relevant. So we have nervousness, check, but describe it. We have evasiveness, check, but describe it. The next one, reactions, check. The next one is deception. Deception is always a relevant factor for your cases. Courts are very, you know, look, they really put a lot of stock in this because lot like every like there's no one size fits all for criminals, right? They come in all shapes and sizes and so forth. But the one thing that all criminals pretty much have in common is that they lie. They lie about everything, right? They lie about the most dumb things. That just why are you even lying about that? They just are a lot of them are just pathological liar. In order to be a criminal and having contact with the police, almost by definition, you have to lie because if you don't lie, then of course you tell the truth and it doesn't your stories don't add up and you get caught, right? So proving lies is a good indicator of reasonable suspicion and probable cause. Finally, specifics about them or the environment. Do you know what do you know what an active drug user looks like? Have you seen people and you're like, dude, that guy is on drugs? because of the bruxism, grinding of teeth, the twitching, the spasms, the lack of self-care, disheveled appearance, and so forth. The fact that they drive a Nissan Altima. All these factors can be put in a report to help prove under the T to the O to the C that they are up to criminal activity. Because that's really what, again, what, right? Is that you can't put your, you don't know exactly what crime they're up to. You might have an idea, but you have reasonable suspicion. I do want to kind of, somebody said, James said, Craig Meyer does a great job in his class showing lots of examples of all these. Craig Meyer is a Jedi. He sees a lot of things that other people just do not see. In order to really hone your craft and be able to see all this criminal activity that's out there that a lot of people, I like to say it's like seeing dead people. You really got to go to Craig's class. Now, here's the cool thing. His class is online. Rick, can you put a link to his class? Go to Craig's class. It is 100% legit. Craig is legit. So really, if you have my search and seizure, can you, and let me get an amen on this, okay? Put my search and seizure class with Craig's class together, and you have a very powerful duo, right? You put my search and seizure class with Craig, and man, you are unstoppable. You are going to put a lot of people in jail, okay? Probably your own family, because you're going to start seeing things that you never knew. Your whole family will be locked up. I mean, you'll just be hooking up everybody. That's how powerful that class is, okay? Okay. Actually, Rick, that's probably not the worst idea. Is Stanley's talking about making that a duo on the website? That's actually probably very smart. It's very smart. Okay, so look, so somebody's asking a question about the St. Louis shooting that happened in March. Rick, can you find that video on YouTube that I did on that OIS? It was within the last few weeks involving that St. Louis shooting. And can you put that and put that in the chat? Because Matthew, I did a very thorough analysis. I mean, I thought it was thorough, but I did an analysis on those issues. Just so you guys know, who am I talking about? This is that shooting that occurred where the officers in St. Louis County tried to make a warrantless arrest of a doctor for harassment and some damage to a vehicle. And they reached into his home to try to pull him out. And he resisted. He fled back into his home. They end up shooting him. And yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Is there any way, so because that topic is outside the scope of today's class, can you talk to, I'm gonna do the search and seizure show right afterwards. Will you bring that up? Is there any way you can just remind me and I'll talk about that during the show? Okay, thank you. All right, quick commercial break. By the way, we made this, okay? Rick and his team made this today, and I thought we were like thinking about the old school like commercial breaks for movies, like intermission. So that's all custom, baby. Okay, we don't mess around here. So somebody talked about, making the duo class. If you guys want to really hone your craft, look, the webinars are great. I think that this is perfect to keep your edge sharp, right? But if your knife is not sharp to begin with, then I'm only putting band-aids on your wounds here. Like you really got to know how to analyze the Fourth Amendment. I can't do that in a 1 hour webinar. I'm just trying to complement what you know. So you need to take my advanced search and seizure class, either in person or online. The online class is exactly the same as I teach in person, okay? It comes with the search and seizure book. It's awesome. You have plenty of time to watch it. You can rewatch it. It's even better than an in-person class in that way. And we have 20% off. So guys, support me, support you, okay? This is a win-win, okay? Support us at Blue to Gold. I do these webinars. I've been doing these webinars for 5 years straight on my own. I've never charged you guys a dime for these webinars, and it's time for you guys to really kick it up a notch with your knowledge. Okay? All right. All right. I look like a weirdo. Okay, don't, Michael, don't try to sugarcoat it. I look like I might be on a list somewhere and have to check in with somebody every month because I don't like the way AI represents me. I'm not saying I'm a very handsome person, in live, but AI makes me look creepy and it is what it is. And Rick will, I should be using like Mike Boone's picture, my other instructor. That's actually pretty funny. Mike says Edward the Vampire. That's actually totally true. So it is what it is. I've given up on trying to get my AI pick to look better. I just have to live my life and you have to live yours. Okay, I'm patrolling Gotham. That's awesome. Okay, reasonable suspicion dragnets. One of the issues that comes up here is that if your reasonable suspicion is so generic that it would allow the detention of too many people, then it's not reasonable. Okay, so we got to understand that sometimes, when you articulate reasonable suspicion, it's like, man, that's generic. Like, are you really telling me that you have enough to detain that guy, right? I mean, is that just the fact that he's in a high crime area late at night? You got to be careful here. As this court has said, given the specialized training and experience that law enforcement officers have, we generally defer to their ability to distinguish between innocent and suspicious behavior, but deference becomes inappropriate when an officer relies on a circumstance incorrigibly free of associations with criminal activity. So it's just, you got to make it somewhat specific as to them. The seminal case on this issue is Brown v. Texas. What happened here is an officer in a small town in Texas. He saw this guy and he didn't, he kind of knew that the guy didn't belong in the town. So you already may have kind of like a racial overtone here. Not belonging is not a good articulation when it comes to this kind of stuff. So he says, again, he says he looked suspicious and we had never seen that subject in that area before. So it's already going to cause alarm bells, for the court. And he made a stop. He was arrested for refusing to identify himself. You see the issue here? There is no articulation. Even if the suspect really was involved in something because the cop had a hunch and he was right about it, the way that he went about it was wrong. I will tell you that little pro tip here. A lot of these hunches can be resolved with a good old-fashioned fill in the blank, okay? Many cops do have valid hunches, right, that are based on, just like, good faith, indicators, and they don't have reasonable suspicion, but oftentimes they can be resolved with what? A good old-fashioned consensual encounter, okay? As this court has said, Officer Fernandez testified at appellant's trial that the situation in the alley looked suspicious. It probably was a little odd. I mean, I understand. But he was unable to point to any facts supporting that conclusion. In short, the appellant's activity was no different from the activity of other pedestrians in that neighborhood. So the cop thought that something was off, but he wasn't able to put his finger on it. Another case that is seminal in this space is Florida versus JL. What happened here is that an anonymous tip came in that a young black man wearing a plaid shirt at a bus stop had a firearm. Now, his age, like if this was true, then he would be a prohibited person because he is too young to conceal a firearm in public. He also, just so you know, he was not at a bus stop. Okay. I'm sorry. He was not at a school bus stop. John, if you have something to add, please add it. So they stopped him, they patted him down, boom, he has a firearm, but we have a fundamental problem. How did this information come into the police department? It came in as what? As an anonymous tip. And if you're going to have an anonymous tip and you're going to act on it, you're going to detain on it, you're going to pat down somebody on it, what do you need to do first? Fill in the blank. What do you need to do first? Articulate what? Articulate, verify what? Okay, cooperation. Okay. That's what it is, okay? It's cooperation. So you need to corroborate inside information. Otherwise, I like to say that this is a license to harass. If we allow this, what does it give citizens the permission to do? You'll be burning up the phones. Hi, 911 can help you. Oh yeah, there's a guy in the bus stop. He's selling drugs. Click. 911, how can I help you? Hey, there's a guy. He just beat his wife and he's down the street. Click. You know, I mean, the whole point is that you would be running around with your head cut off. You've got to find some inside information. Okay, and you know, inside information is something that the general public would not know. But Anthony, hold on, hold on. They knew that he had a gun. Well. That's after the fact. You have to prove the pat down first, right? You can't justify the intrusion on what you find. Okay, so you've heard of the fact arrest. So remember, a Terry stop has to be what? It has to be valid at its inception, and also in its duration, right? Terry stops are very limited in order to confirm or dispel your suspicions. If they go over the You know, if the duration and they're not diligently pursued, then they become a de facto arrest. They become an arrest in fact, and now you're gonna have to have probable cause, right? So, basically, a de facto arrest is when you don't really want to arrest somebody. You want to keep them out of custody, but the law says they are in custody under the facts of the case. Okay. I wouldn't challenge you, Mike, if that means anything. You seem to be getting you've been getting a lot of my answers correct for a long time in this in these webinars. So I would not mess with you if that makes you tell him I said that too. You say, hey, you probably should take him at his word. De facto factors, detention duration, how long are we detaining this guy, right? 40 minutes, 60 minutes, 2 hours. There's no prohibition, generally speaking, in most states except Nevada. Nevada is 60 minutes. After that becomes a de facto arrest. But you know, most states don't have a rule, but you better be diligent. The degree of restraint is always a factor. Are you cuffing and stuffing him in the back of the black and white? Are you pointing guns at him or her? It's just a factor. I'm just saying it's a factor. Location, are you taking him back to the police station? Are you isolated? Are you know, is it all, you know, no, it's not in a public space? Factors. Nature of police conduct. How are the cops acting? Are they surrounding that person, right? And making him feel like, you know, he's in a lot of trouble. I mean, again, it's all to tell you circumstances. You know, I was teaching in Fort Worth. I'm, you know, close to there. And he was, this cop came up to me and he was, you know, this your stereotypical Texas cop, which means they got that handlebar mustache type deal and the big hat. He says, Anthony, I know all about that surrounding business. Got my ass chewed by a judge for it. So now, when I'm trying to get my consent and I see my partner's a little too close, I say, hey, back on up. You can shoot him from back there. And I thought it was hilarious. The guy was really funny, man. He was really, really funny. Reasonable person standard. We look it through the eyes of, you know, we look through the eyes of a reasonable person. Dennis or Denise, right? Says, do Washington cops need reasonable suspicion to ask for consent to search for drugs on a traffic stop? The answer is absolutely, you do. Absolutely, you need in Washington, you need reasonable suspicion to expand the scope of the search or the stop. And cops in Washington cannot ask for consent without reasonable suspicion. That's not true in all states, but definitely. Hey, Mike, you know I do a good impression. Don't even play with me. You know I have a good Texas accent. Okay, so Rick, should I tell him the Georgia joke that I learned the other day? So when determining when an investigative detention becomes an arrest, courts often balance the safety concerns of the officers and you know and innocent bystanders and so forth and. So look, the point here is that if you have a good reason for using handcuffs and pointing guns and so forth, then you should be fine. Now, my Michael says he says, don't mess with Georgia. I'm from Georgia. Now you have forced my hand. Now I have no choice but to tell this joke that was told me. I was at the Georgia Chiefs of Police Conference last month. I believe it was like last month, but time flies when you're having fun. And this retired cop, you know, he says, you know, hey, he's like, he's with the group, like we're out having drinks and stuff. He goes, hey, fellas, I want to get something off my chest. I had a very embarrassing experience when I was in high school. You see, I got caught having sex with my teacher. And you know what the most embarrassing part was? I was homeschooled. Anyway, let's get back to the class. And if I was, just so you know, I was on the floor dying laughing. He said that because it was, he said it in such a funny way. So you can steal that joke. All right. So what happened here is see, hey, at least some people like it, huh? Bliss. Oh, and so Amanda says that like the joke is probably more for Arkansas. Eh, that might be some truth to that. I'm not gonna talk too much crap at my Southerners, but they're some of the funniest cops I have ever met. They're absolutely some of the funniest cops I've ever met. So what happened here that there was an auto accident, and this guy, this guy named King, he was in his car. The cop came up, and the cop saw a handgun, in the car. Then the officer pulls out, his or her gun. I'm not sure which one. His or her gun points at him. Get out of the car! Get out of the car! And man, wasn't that a little much, right? Her handgun, right? Wasn't that a little much? And she said, "You'll be shot if you didn't comply." This is overkill, right? This is overkill. It's a gun. It's not like the guy was pointing at anybody. And then after some drugs and money were found and so forth, he was not a prohibited person, and the state did not disallow loaded guns in cars. What's the issue here? The cop overreacted, right? This is a de facto arrest. This is not a Terry stop. This is not, we don't have PC to arrest him because it wasn't per se illegal. And as the court said, Officer LeMaster's conduct went far beyond what was necessary to ensure her safety while advising defense of the hazardous traffic conditions. Officer LeMaster's initiated what was essentially an arrest procedure. And Corey says likely excessive force. That is true. That is true. That can be an excessive force issue in this day and age. Definitely, without question, without question. Okay, here is U.S. versus Torres. What happened briefly? We're almost done here for those people that have to skedaddle. What happened here? And do me a favor, before I talk about the case, look, Teresa, our amazing social media manager, who has really been working her butt off for the last year or so, maybe longer that she's been with us, has done a great job with social media. And I know you guys like to communicate through social media. I'm old school. I kind of like the phone. You guys like social media, Terry. Oh, Teresa, we have a Terry that works for us, and she's going to kill me for that. But Teresa, do me a favor. Can you put the links in the chat so people can link and click on them? Thank you so much. And Leonardo says, would you be able to email the PowerPoint shown here? You have to go to Rick will explain that. There's a way to get the PowerPoint. Okay. So what happened here is that a citizen, it was a flag down, like, hey, cop, this guy on the bridge, he was shooting at a building before you arrived. And the cop didn't know about it. It wasn't like a call for service or anything like that. But he went over there. He saw this guy named Torres. They point, you know, this might be a little over exaggeration what happened, but he pointed a gun at the person. He said, show me your hands. They patted him down. He has a gun. And the point here, was that a valid Terry stop or was that a de facto arrest? Was it a T or a D? Terry stop or de facto arrest? Torres was accused of shooting at a building moments before. The cop did not know it, but he's basing this stop on what the citizen told him. De facto arrest or Terry stop? T or D? Okay. Yeah, it's gonna be a valid Terry stop. So this was not a de facto arrest, right? So as the court said, to begin, there is no per se rule that pointing guns at people or handcuffing them constitutes an arrest. Terry recognized that when officers are investigating a suspect who the officers reasonably believe is armed and presently dangerous to the officers or to others, it would be clearly unreasonable to deny the officers the power to take necessary measures to determine whether the person is in fact carrying a weapon and to neutralize the threat of physical harm. Okay, so that's a very, very good case. I'll answer some questions in a second here. So what happened here is a brother stabbed his brother to death during a house party. So Rick, keep that in mind, okay? Following with this case. Five family members who may have witnessed the murder were taken to the police station without their consent. They did not want to go and so forth, but they were taken anyway. They were released after 3 hours. They brought a false arrest claim. Was that a T or a D? Was that a Terry stop, Terry detention, right? Or a de facto arrest? Okay. Correct. Right. That's the house that it happened at, if you care. This was a false arrest, a de facto arrest under the Fourth Amendment. As the court said, although defendants argue plaintiff, so defense are the cops, plaintiff is your family members. So although the police argue that the family members were detained, not seized, and the officers were following SOPs, detention for custodial interrogation, regardless of its label, intrudes so severely on interests protected by the Fourth Amendment as necessary to trigger the traditional safeguards against illegal arrest. The worst thing that a police officer can say in court when asked why he or she conducted the search and seizure is, I was trained that way, right? The second word, one, right, is that I always do business that way. Why is I was trained that way the worst? Because you're basically saying the whole department is effed up. It's not just me, Your Honor. We're all jacked up around here. You might want to go and do a pattern and practice lawsuit against my agency because that's some big, you might want to add some commas to that check, Your Honor, because we're all jacked up. The second worst is I'm always jacked up, right? So not that you have a rogue, just a rogue officer, you have a rogue agency. Hope that makes sense. All right. Let me give you maybe a quintessential de facto arrest. And now that's a good time for a commercial break. I mean, that's one way to get rid of a Crown Vic. All I got to tell you, if you don't like your Crown Vic, do you really have to do that? Is there any other way to get rid of that car? Okay. So Cody says he's now under arrest. Okay. So the last commercial break before we're going to give away a gun is the upcoming webinars. Next week, we're doing probable cause deep dive. So we have reasonable suspicion. Now we're going to talk about the probable cause, the cousin, of course, the sibling of reasonable suspicion. We're going to talk about undercover operations on the June 25th, and we're going to talk about bulletproof DUI reports on the 9th. Even if you don't do DUI investigations and so forth, join us. Share with your friends. And by the way, we're going to be giving away a gun every week until we decide to stop doing our little promo, but we're just trying to have a little fun here. We're trying to arm America during this trying time. It's a trying time, okay? We look at what's on the news, and Rick and I got together and we said, man, we got to do something. We got to do something for our country. And I said, let's give them guns. Okay, let's give them guns and ammo. Okay, God bless these out there, America. What's up, Zach? Okay. So the takeaways here is number one, if you're going to use force, and on a Terry stop, it better be justified. If you're going to put handcuffs on somebody, it better be justified. Articulate all facts. What did Shakespeare say? Okay, if You, if you've been to my class before, what did Shakespeare say? He said, I'll say it for you. He said, ye, because you're old English, right? He said, ye, that's Y-E-E-E, who articulates the most wins. Okay? Now, he didn't really say that, but I know that he would. Okay? Ye, who articulates the most wins. And finally, use nerds. Nervousness, evasiveness, reactions not consistent with innocence, deception, and specifics about them or the environment. Okay, now let's give away a gun. I think we're going to end the webinar right here so that we don't share people's business online. Guys that are watching this, thank you so much for being here. Share this with your friends. And here's the deal: if you're watching this, if you got this, if somebody shared this with you, and you're like, man, I want to join this. I want to, have my name and so forth, then go to bluetogold.com and go to free webinars and just sign for the webinar. You don't have to actually attend live. If whoever wins this gun is not here tonight, we'll reach out to them. Okay? All right. Thank you guys so much. And Rick, also, don't they get more points for doing things like sharing our social media and so forth? Well, I guess we'll talk about that next time. All right, guys. God bless those who are watching online. I'm going to stop the recording. For those who are here live, of course, do not go anywhere.